Ladies and gentlemen, are you ready for Banal of America
No commercials, no subscriptions, no network, no rules, and at the end of the day, my friends, no comparison. Welcome to another edition of BOA Audio Season 9. On tonight's program, very excited about our guest. He is the man behind the outstanding website, The UFO Trail, which you can find, of course, at ufotrail.blogspot.com. Talking about Jack Brewer. I just want to jump in, not even really go crazy on the introductions, because I got to put this stuff over, though, first, because it's awesome, awesome material. Jack Brewer is, he's really digging at these stories tenaciously, and the difficult stories in ufology, and he's uncovering all kinds of stuff, and without him, a lot of this information wouldn't even be around, and people wouldn't be as informed about the sort of inside baseball stuff that's going on in ufology, and all that's going on at the UFO Trail, and I've been digging into it the last couple of days. I've always sort of followed along with it, but I really dug into it over the last couple of days and was just completely blown away by some of the stuff I hadn't noticed originally or maybe had forgotten about and remembered as I was reading it. So I'm very much looking forward to talking to him tonight. Jack Brewer, welcome to BOA Audio, my friend.
Well, thank you, sir. I really appreciate that intro. Thank you very much.
Oh, man, I meant it. I meant it, Jack. You do some outstanding work. I was really blown away by it. I can't put my finger on it, but it's just really, really, it's powerful stuff. I feel like you're almost threatening the hierarchy of what's really going on in ufology at times as I read your stuff. I'm like, oh, Jesus, Jack, don't go any further. You're going to...
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And I think, if nothing else, I try to do a good job of writing about or reporting, if you will, what took place, what we can verify, and then separate my opinions from it. And even doing that seems like that alone could put a writer a step ahead of the field at this point in time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's a fuse we've already lit. But let's start out with the bio, the background. As you know from having heard the show, you like to start out with that and find out more from folks. Who is Jack Brewer? You seem like a pretty sensible guy. You have your wits about you. You write some great stuff. You're resourceful. You're really digging into this. What are you mixed up in this UFO stuff for? You know, what's a nice guy like you doing with a subject like this?
I guess I got into it for many of the same reasons anyone else does. I'm now 50 years old. I was born in Nashville, and I've lived around the Southeast, Charlotte, New Orleans. Lived in the D.C., Baltimore area. At this point in time, I'm in Central Florida, and I am a freelance writer. I've been employed in the music industry off and on pretty much all of my life. Uh-huh. And I as a child, I was interested in UFOs and ghosts and the paranormal, and it continued into adulthood. And I think, like everybody, I was blown away by the surge in the 1980s and the stories we were hearing and the books that were being put out. And as I got more and more involved in it and began to ask questions, I actually came to be insulted and like almost personally hurt that if you went a little below the surface, you found so much of this stuff just crumbling and having no means of verification. And so eventually, you know, by 2010, I decided that I felt like I had some things to say, and, you know, the internet was in full swing, so I decided to blog and pretty much asked people questions, tried to hold them accountable for the things they were claiming they had proof of, and you pretty much know what happened from there.
Yeah. So you've been at this for a long time. It's interesting. I got sort of a sense of what you're saying there, like the sense of betrayal.
Absolutely.
You know, yeah.
That's a good description. In the early 1990s, I was rather involved with some people in the UFO community, and as time went on, I felt like I was learning much more about how these people behave than what they claimed they knew anything about, you know. as one of my contacts put it, and I kind of like this description, you write about the people doing the pointing instead of what they're pointing at, and maybe so.
Yeah, man, I've been saying that about my show. You know, it's not as much about the lights in the sky as it is about the people on the ground, what they're doing, because, you know, we can't get a handle on the UFO phenomenon, but we can certainly understand the people involved in all this, and they're strange.
yeah, and I appreciate that, you know, you have a results-oriented approach, and absolutely, from a social perspective, it's an absolutely fascinating evolution over the years, and the things we can trace it back to, you know, that in the, you know, 1960s, Dr. Simon worked with the Hills, and the next thing you know, 40, 50 years later is just, you know, dumbfounding how something like that evolved and to have so little to hang their head on to make such, you know, leaps and claims of evidence of something.
That's interesting.
But yeah, like you said, betrayal is certainly a feeling I had of people in the community that are more than happy to take you under their wing and to claim themselves qualified to explain things to you that very much takes on. Yeah. You laugh because it is, you know, a thing, for lack of a better term.
No, I know exactly. I'm laughing because it is. Yes. I'm laughing.
Absolutely. It's like the opposite of the, the stubborn debunker. Like, on the one hand, I don't want to try to tell people what they did or didn't see or did or did not experience, but I don't know. How should I know? And so, you know, on the one hand, people don't want to come forward and talk about their experiences because they don't want people making fun of them and that they have, you know, mental problems or misinterpreted or whatever. But then the other extreme of that is certainly people that will tell you what they think you experienced, that, you know, because you had a story about something weird that happened once, they want to bring you into the fold of alien abductees and just all kinds of outlandish things that, of course, more moderate thinking people are concerned about their reputations and being grouped in with a fringe bunch of people. So on the one side, you have the people that tell you it's crazy and nothing happened, and on the other side, you have the people that tell you that, you know, you've been flying around with the reptilians. So it's tough.
You've been chosen by the Venusians for a mission. And then the people in the middle who don't know what's going on. Well, I don't even know how to even unpack all this with you. We talked about this before we started the show. There's so many areas that I want to talk about. I feel like this is, you know, this is like a time capsule sort of question, because in 5 or 10 years, I presume this is going to be a ridiculous footnote in UFO history, but right now we're sort of like a few weeks away from this Roswell slides thing. And we should, I guess, cover it, you know, to lead here to start the show, because that's what people are going to be hearing a lot about, I guess, leading up to whatever the hell's going on with this whole thing. And as I said to you before we kicked off the show, I barely know anything about this, because I immediately, I just don't, once I hear a story that I can feel like I can safely dismiss out of hand, I don't even keep up with it. And so I haven't. But you're like a watchdog of ufology. Of course, there's the UFO watchdog who did great work.
I saw the wreck and had to look. Yeah, I did. you're right. It, first of all, yeah, you're not missing anything. This would be one to glaze over, non-story, that's been promoted very well, very effectively. Essentially, what we have here, and probably lots of the listeners know too, is a group of authors and successful promoters are having an event May 5th in Mexico City to show a couple of slides that they feel depict an alien body. And where do you go with that? You know, they have not been able up to this point to explain the chain of custody of these slides. And I hesitate to even give a rundown on it because there's a lot of contradictions in it. If I were to tell you what we can verify ourselves about this, it would be that some authors already known in the UFO community and with the Roswell slides are going to present these pictures and what they feel like is apparently evidence. And what we actually know about it is that that's it, really. They have some slides that they claim to have. We don't know where they came from, at least not yet. And if we had an exemplary, I mean an exact chain of custody, of course, as you know, all you know is that you have a photo of something. You can't get a physiological composition of what's in a photo. So,
how many?
You know, I mean,
to the best of our knowledge, who's even seen these slides, and has anyone like of any name value in ufology been like, "Yeah, I've seen them. They're good," or something? You know what I mean? Or is it shadowy figures that are offering up these slides?
It's Tom Carey, Don Schmidt. They claim to have them. Jamie Masson is putting the show on in Mexico City. There's a few people scattered around that say they shared pictures with them. Some got leaked to the internet. Various blogs have blurry photos that people can see. That, in my opinion, there's no reason whatsoever to assume that the humanoid in the photo is an alien. I mean, in my opinion, the only reason someone would, when they see a being with two arms, two legs, and is clearly mummified or petrified, the only reason a person would make a leap to thinking it was a retrieved alien is that pop culture and myth. I mean... You know, why wouldn't you assume a humanoid is a human? Well, you should, until you have a lot of reason to think otherwise, you know?
You make it sound so simple, Jack. You make it sound so simple, but there are many people out there who unfortunately do not see a humanoid and then just jump right to aliens.
Know.
So it's
they do, and even this week, it took an even worse turn, and Tom Carey and Schmidt were on a podcast and claimed that they were trying to minimize the link to Roswell, and that was an insult to a lot of people's intelligence. That it's pretty much been they came out and they said initially that they had Mr. Kerry called it a smoking gun, and now as the event gets closer, is like trying to put on the brakes and say, let's just take a look at it. And we might be having a whole different conversation, a whole different discussion about it if these authors, if some researchers had said, hey, we got a couple of slides, we've got a story about somebody that may have owned them once upon a time, and it's kind of interesting. We think it's kind of interesting. Anybody want to have a look? Would be altogether different than people claiming they have conclusive proof of something and then backtracking on it and then,
Yeah, if they had come at it first and were like, hey, we have some cool and interesting pictures. Everyone, take a look at these. What do you think? Yeah, then people would be more open to all this. But it's how many times can we fall for all this definitive proof garbage?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
And the whole thing was putting on like a big event and everything. It's like we've been waiting decades for proof of aliens, dude. If you have them, get them out now. Like, what are you waiting for?
Yeah, that's what's been an insult to me is you write a paper, you submit it to a journal, you get some peer review, and either the people that have promoted and reported on this sincerely don't understand how incompetently it was conducted, or they do, and either one pretty much means not to pay any attention to it, as far as I'm concerned.
Hmm. Well, we'll see what happens. If I could make a prediction, I'd say it'll get a lot of sort of like minor media attention, and then people will forget about it after a couple of days, and then within a couple of weeks, it'll have been debunked somehow. That's my prediction.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Now, with my luck, it'll be like the breakthrough, and we'll be sitting here with egg on our faces. But.
Well, I mean, fine. If somebody can show aliens crashed at Roswell, or somebody can even show that they have evidence of alien bodies being retrieved from wherever, well, fine. But this isn't what the process would look like, you know?
And plus, at the end of the day, all this is a picture of an alien on like a slab or something. So what good does it do us
in
the long run?
A lot of people have thought that, you know, it looks like a mummy in a museum. There's a lot of things that one should assume before they would promote the fantastic. And that's one of the things that, you know, becomes problematic in the UFO community when a person subjects themselves to enough of the hyperbole and the sensationalism. It does start to become to seem reasonable to, you know, think that, you know, fill in the blank, any one of the fantastic stories, where it's really. But if we surround ourselves with people that are channeling and, you know, think that orbs are, you know, ghosts from years past or whatever, you know, like I say, just fill in the blank.
Yeah.
It begins to seem reasonable to think so, or that it's already established.
Mm.
And it's, of course, not, you know, like in the case of the Roswell slides, you need a lot of extraordinary evidence to think that a humanoid's anything other than something from Earth, you know.
You make a compelling argument here about the sort of this, I don't know if I'd call it, I guess, not really peer pressure, but sort of the sociological aspect of it. You're absolutely right. You know, there are people who, they're so immersed in this that they don't ever get any dissenting opinion that they don't already discount. You know what I mean? So.
Absolutely. And
we're talking about everyday people here, not researchers or authors or stuff. We're just talking about everyday people that go to work, you know, but they're so immersed in this that, like you said, their worldview is completely changed. What they think, what is they think their worldview is how the world is, and we haven't proven that yet, at least as far as, you know, aliens or any of this other stuff goes.
And they're entitled to think so, but if demand people agree or they want to present it as the way things are, that's unreasonable. Like it's unreasonable for a researcher to present a story and expect people to accept it without question and without verification. And people shouldn't be respected that do so, and researchers shouldn't be respected that, expect us to accept things without reasonable verification. I think one of the worst perpetrators of that just come to mind right off the bat is I really got insulted over the years with the Mutual UFO Network and MUFON claiming to conduct scientific study. And if I were going to the Hypnosis Society or I were, hanging out at a Fortean book reading club, I'd be a lot more accepting of their beliefs and their alternative ideas. Where when a nonprofit corporation that, operates under the 501c3 IRS code claims to conduct scientific study and is presenting, people like Paul Hellyer as an expert speaker, I personally have a problem with that, as a writer, as an interested party, all the way around.
Yeah, you must be psychic, Jack, because I have MUFON in my notes here next, in the notes. So well done. I want to talk about MUFON. I love the blog post at UFO Trail that compares, or I guess delves into the alleged or hoped for or hyped up alliance between MUFON and Gaipan in France. And
Yeah.
how you tried to find out more about it from MUFON, and they were like, "Hit the bricks, pal. Don't ask us about that." And then Gaipan's like, "Hey,
Yeah.
yeah, what do you want to know?" And then Gaipan, just a spoiler alert, Gaipan's like, "Yeah, MUFON, they're they want to hang out, but they're kind of we just let them think we're buddies, kind of." So that's the
Yeah.
impression I got. But tell us this story, and then we'll get into sort of MUFON and what the hell is going on with MUFON. But please elucidate this Gaipan MUFON tale.
Yeah, that was a post I did a while back, and at two or three symposiums ago, MUFON made an announcement that they were having a collaboration with Gaipan, the French organization agency that would investigate aerial phenomena. And so the next symposium was upcoming, and I thought it's been a year, seems reasonable to ask what happened. And yeah, I basically got told to go to hell, And again, this is by a nonprofit corporation that we have every right to ask what you're doing with funds, where they go, what you're working on. And they wanted to give me very vague responses and basically didn't tell me anything at all.
Yeah.
Then I contacted the Gaipan director, who was very, very friendly, open, didn't seem to have any problem discussing things. And I'm paraphrasing here, but basically told me MUFON was trying to make it a bigger collaboration than it actually was, and that basically they were just agreeing to share some reports as they came around. And he went ahead and he sent me some information for the blog post and some slides I could read and share. And yeah, it did not endear me further with these people at the Mutual UFO Network, no.
I can imagine. I can imagine. That was fantastic reporting, sir. just fantastic stuff.
Well, thank
I absolutely,
you.
absolutely loved it. It shows so much of what really is going on here. And, you know, it made me even more because I've been obsessed with this French conference they had last year that only like a couple of Americans even got invited to. And you notice there wasn't any MUFON representation there either. What do you think is – I don't know what to make of this MUFON anymore. I feel like it's kind of like consuming itself almost, if that makes any sense. It's like a bureaucracy unto itself. It's lost its way, you know. It really and
yeah.
It feels also like it's kind of – It's like locked into this sort of like Boy Scouts of America Netflix kind of model where people are paying a certain, I don't know what they're paying for their dues, but they're probably only really getting like the newsletter or something, you know, and they just keep subscribing forever. So they have this huge like base of people that half of them maybe don't even know they're even a part of MUFON anymore.
Yeah, I think you're right. In fairness to them, I would have to say I haven't attended one of their events in a couple years or longer, so I'm really not qualified to say what they're doing here locally or at the International Symposium only by, you know, what I read or see online. I do feel qualified, though, to go ahead and say that, again, if you claim to conduct scientific study, it's pretty easy to tell whether you do or not. And I would challenge anyone to be able to present me, two, three, maybe, scientific studies conducted by MUFON. Or let me put it this way. I'm really confident in saying I think that the Falderal is way disproportionate to any scientific work that could be demonstrated that organization has conducted or is in the process of, even. It's very disappointing. And again, if they didn't claim to conduct scientific study, you know, if it were just a organization for people interested in possible aliens to get together and discuss their ideas, well, more power to them. But they claim to have a whole scientific infrastructure and volunteers, and if they do, they certainly don't seem to be publishing
anything.
Much. right.
Yeah. I
anything. Yeah.
You left me flummoxed there for a moment. I'd never heard the word Falderal. I actually had to Google that while you were... That's a fantastic word. Falderal. That's going to be part of my lexicon now. Thank you. And it is
that's
all...
That's an oldie.
Yeah, that's an oldie but a goodie, man. And it is all Falderal. You look at the MUFON thing. They should be, by all rights, they seem to have like inherited this throne as, I guess, the national UFO organization here in America. And it's like they're completely impotent. You know, that's the real tragedy of it all, if you really think about it. And I think you and I, you know, we talked about the betrayal earlier. I think we're coming at this like, I don't hate MUFON, man. Like, I want MUFON to be a powerhouse. I want MUFON to be as taken
right.
seriously as the Green Party, man. But they're not. Something's wrong here. And I think there's a lot of problems inside MUFON that are a big part of it, not just some kind of outside thing. They're not being held down by the man.
Yeah. And they do have some people here and there that do some good work. I mean, I've seen some decent presentations. I'd even say some good presentations at Florida MUFON. I know that they have some competent film experts that have presented some good stuff occasionally. But if someone were to arrive at the opinion, like you said, that they're just empty, I'd have a tough time convincing them otherwise. A point I'd kind of like to touch on, too, you know, as we discussed all of these kind of things, is I think it's important, I feel like sometimes anyway, for me to clarify to people, I don't have a degree, so... I mean, I'm not a person that's qualified in a hard science to call people out or to contribute research. And I think it's important for me to point that out because I'd like it to be encouraging to people like me that are not formally educated to understand. You don't have to be to read papers that are authored by scientists or to conduct your own research or to ask people the tough questions. I mean, none of that requires a degree to read material that's relevant to the things you're interested in.
Exactly. It's not rocket science. It's just UFOs.
Right, right.
Well, the thing I applaud you for that, man, and you're right, you know. Everybody has the right to ask these questions because this is an important topic if what these people are saying is true, you know. It's like people are coming at us with tales of aliens coming to the planet and the government being in cahoots and stuff. It's like, well, you really got to prove this, dude. I'm not going to just sign up for your newsletter immediately. Who's driving the ship at MUFON? Do they have like a national sort of agenda? Do they have a plan or anything? I mean, what's their? That's what confuses me in a big way. You know, it's like I said, they seem impotent. They seem like they're wandering aimlessly. You know, I don't know if it's just I don't know. I'm confused. But who's driving the ship over there? Do they have any sort of leadership
they have
plan?
A,
I mean,
they have a board of directors, and as you said, it's had turmoil over the years. They've had problems. There was, you know, the big Robert Bigelow problem, you know, with the star team and something that, you know, it always just amazed me didn't seem to get more interest from the UFO community than it did. But James Carrion accused Mr. Bigelow of moving funds for undisclosed sponsors that he only revealed to John Schuessler, another MUFON board member, and not the rest of the board. And I just found it fascinating that nobody really cared. Like, whatever, you got any aliens, you know? And I just find that fascinating that a nonprofit corporation is called out by the director of moving funds around for an undisclosed sponsor, and nobody really seemed particularly concerned about that. And you know, George Hansen, in his excellent book, The Trickster, he has a chapter on interference, what we might call interference or government interest in UFO groups. And he noted that, you know, it's really amazing more people aren't interested in it, considering how much of it there is. And I agree with that, but I don't know, man. Back to your original question, I don't know what's happening at MUFON these days. They don't like to answer my questions, and I got kind of tired of asking them, you know, of the upper leadership. Like back when Mr. McDonald, Dave McDonald, was the director, I had asked him early on what he was interested in achieving, and he corresponded with me, and I made a blog post about it. And one of the things I was concerned about and shortly after that was their Southern California chapter that their current director, Mr. Harzin, came out of, was inviting Dr. David Jacobs to speak at the at LA MUFON, and I asked Mr. McDonald if he would comment on how an organization that claims to, you know, promote and represent scientific study could allow a person that's not even certified that does hypnosis and, you know, the whole David Jacobs in the woods bit. And so
that,
I asked him to comment on that, and he said something to the effect of they allow any type of investigation to be explored. And, you know, then I came back with, well, you know, what dictionary are you using? I mean, that's not... that's not defined by the scientific community as investigation.
Yeah.
You know, and again, if it were the Mutual Hypnosis Society, fine. But, you know, I mean, so I've always felt like I largely got a runaround from active MUFON personnel. But again, I would say at more local levels, even some of the people in higher positions, I couldn't say that they're insincere, and certainly some of them have the degree and the qualifications to know science study, but we're just not seeing it. That's the bottom line. We're just not seeing it. And unlike you, I could get in their corner and cheer them on, but not when they're inviting David Jacobs to explain to me what's going on. No.
Right. Exactly. Let me see. I know what I wanted to ask you about here, because I had never even heard of this story before. This is within the MUFON realm. And I know you've talked about it on Jeff Ritzman's program, Paranormal Waypoint, back in the day. But I want you to share this story here on our show, because I want to kind of like, for the record, for the for the history books of this insane field, especially because I'd never even heard of this. This is this whole Carpenter affair.
Yeah,
you know, it goes to show you folks the level of how things are kind of covered up in this field. In this field that fights the cover-up, things are covered up. And I've been in this for over 10 years, and I'd never even heard of this story, the Carpenter Affair, till I read it on UFO Trail. So I know a lot of the old-timers in the field, probably who were around the 80s and the 90s, have heard about it or lived through it or whatever and may remember it. But those of us who came along, you know, in the new millennium, this is news to me and probably some other folks. So tell this story, the Carpenter Affair.
Yeah, the irony is something, a field that demands disclosure. Yeah. And like you say, the old timers heard you say Carpenter Affair and they're going, oh boy, here we go.
Yeah.
A lot of people have probably heard of Leah Haley. She was a possible alien abductee, and early on, she contacted Bud Hopkins. And when she first contacted Bud, it was because she had a memory of a UFO sighting with short-term amnesia or missing time from her childhood. And Hopkins referred her to a man named John Carpenter that was in Missouri. And he was a social worker and a hypnotist and became the MUFON director of abduction research during the 1990s. And she is just one of what became 140 people that he shared information from their abductee case files with Robert Bigelow, and at that time the NIDS, the National Institutes of Discovery Science, I think was what that stood for, and did so without their knowledge or consent. And I've emailed Mr. Carpenter a few times, and in his defense, he has been willing to discuss it and answer the questions about it. I've never been able to get Mr. Bigelow to want to discuss it or to be willing to talk about it. Mr. Schussler, that was the director of MUFON at the time, has never responded to my inquiries about it either. John Carpenter does not say that he sold the files. He doesn't. That's what he was accused of, and he doesn't like to term it that. He says that he shared information with scientists that were willing to look at the material, and that he was compensated for his time and expenses and reimbursed.
Right, right. He's kind of saying he was like compensated in a roundabout way. He's like, I share the files, but I wasn't getting the money for the files. I was getting the money
and
for.
And I got paid. Yeah, and right, and I kept the originals so I didn't sell them. And you know, I wrote. He's entitled to describe his activities any way he chooses, but I can certainly understand why people would call that selling the files. And yeah, basically, what it comes down to is Mr. Carpenter gave Robert Bigelow and the board at NIDS access to the files of 140. Abductees that he had worked with while director of, you know, MUFON's, heading up MUFON's abduction research. And MUFON wasn't going to even comment on it, wasn't going to investigate it. A researcher named Gary Hart took the story and ran with it around the turn of the century. And that eventually resulted in filing a formal complaint with MUFON as well as the state of Missouri against Mr. Carpenter's license as a social worker. And following that, Carpenter resigned from his position, and the state of Missouri put his license on a 5-year probation period that he successfully completed. And as far as I know, a lot of the 140 possible abductees never did know it happened. MUFON certainly never, to the best of my knowledge, have discussed it publicly. As a matter of fact, when he resigned, he was, Mr. Schussler wrote in the journal how much they'd miss him and how much they had appreciated his work. And it's a very concerning story on a number of levels. You know, informed consent, a lot of research subject protections come to mind. I asked Colonel John Alexander to please comment because he was a staff member for Mr. Bigelow at the time, and I asked him to comment on whatever he might be at liberty to share about it. I asked him about the Mr. Bigelow moving funds around, as James Carrion had asserted, and I asked Colonel Alexander if he could please comment on why Bob Bigelow and his board might have ever wanted to finance, you know, what really amounted to John Carpenter's activities into, you know, hypnotizing people and having them think that they were alien abductees and my labs and all this stuff. And Colonel Alexander just replied that I should ask Bigelow if I had questions about the past. And I can appreciate that to an extent.
Yeah.
But it's not like I'm asking a person to tell me about a third party. I'm asking about, you were there and you were employed. And Colonel Alexander even confirmed on UFO updates list at the time that had indeed taken place. So it's not like I'm just asking, you know, what your opinion is about somebody. But
right.
As I understand it, they have the non-disclosure agreements and, you know, all that stuff to be involved with Mr. Bigelow. But there were a lot of problems in the Carpenter affair, a lot of legitimate questions that were never answered. Where do you even begin, you know?
Yeah, it's a real mess, and it's amazing that, you know, people don't even know about it nowadays in ufology and stuff. It's sad. It really is.
I'd imagine you could ask the MUFON board of directors and find people that wouldn't know what it was.
Yeah.
It wouldn't surprise me at all.
It connects to the story that was blowing up a few months ago, which was like that there was sharing going on amongst the big time abduction researchers of files and stuff. The I guess we'll call them allegations.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know exactly the right wording for that, but that was the scuttlebutt, the argument, the debate or whatever. You know, and it just goes to show you that this seems to be something that's been going on for a while. And I mentioned this a long, long, long time ago on the show, and it's like, a really sad, I don't know, it's a really sad sort of observation about the field and everything, where it's like people who have these experiences and stuff, to a certain amount, to a certain, like, mindset of people, those experiences go from human beings to, like, specimens to be studied. And their humanity is,
right,
like, stripped away from them, and they just become pawns, sort of, to be studied and examined by these folks who want to get to the bottom of this. I don't even know. I don't know why they do it, but it's, you know what I mean?
I do. I know exactly what you mean, and I think there's a lot of different motives, a lot of different agendas. One of the things I definitely drew out of the Carpenter affair while you know, delving into it for what turned into years was, one of the things we can think about that is that he had a vested financial interest in the people he was working with having fantastic stories. I mean, that would be, at least that could be one thing we could question, if he had a financial interest. Because if he's sharing these files and he's getting for these files, and one figure I was given was about $14,000 for these 140 files.
Jeez.
And Mr. Carpenter acknowledged that he was paid several times over a period of time as he shared information with NIDS. And again, what he communicated to me is he didn't, the people would really mind him sharing it, or he wasn't telling them anything about Leah Haley. She wasn't talking about in public anyway. And, you know, that's not the issue, especially from a professional research perspective and human research subject protection. But again, if he's sharing these files and he's getting paid for them, one could pretty reasonably suspect that he, a file where somebody says, "No, I'm just not feeling anything, John," isn't going to be worth a lot of money, you know.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, I'm going to count you down from 10 and tell me what you got. You know, you got bug-eyed creatures there with scalpels. No, I'm just not seeing it. Well, I mean, I don't think that one's going to go in the pot, you know. So it seems to me, you know, I mean, so these guys, and especially authors that are trying to get book deals, and yet another thing the Carpenter affair involved was he was marketing the regression tapes. And so, of course, I mean, that's not going to be of value if it doesn't contain sensational content. And so my point with that, and you know, thanks for letting me get this out, is
fire away,
that the investigator has a financial interest in where the investigation is going. And we see that again and again and again.
Right, because they... Maybe not in this instance, but in a larger sense, I guess, there's like a motivation here in the field. It's there's like two prongs. There's two goats you have to feed. There's like the science goat trying to figure this out, and there's the entertainment goat. And I think the entertainment is has overtaken the field, where it's like you have to keep feeding the masses this UFO stuff. You have to keep regurgitating it and reinventing it. In order to,
I definitely agree with that. Like in MUFON's defense, for example, the train is moving so fast out of control down the tracks now that they would have to take a major hit to say, okay, we're only bringing up guys that are actually scientific and can tell us what we got.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, people aren't going to fly to Vegas to hear that. Because, you know, we largely don't have anything. Like, One of my contacts told me once, you know, a retired chemical engineer said, well, you know, what we know about UFOs, you could fit on a postcard, you know. So, right. In MUFON's defense, it's tough to they'd have to bite the financial bullet to stop bringing ticket draws.
Exactly,
know?
Yeah. You know, I love and respect Dr. Tyler Cochon, but if someone offered me the chance to promote an event, gave me the venue, and I could just reap all the benefits of doing an event with Tyler Cochon or an event with David Icke, I'm sorry, Tyler, but I would have to go with David Icke, because at least, you know, then I'd be able to pay off my mortgage.
Yeah, and I think that's what we're seeing in Mexico City. If these guys had shrugged their shoulders and said, huh, that's a kind of interesting picture there, I'll put it on my blog and ask the, you know, anthropologists and archaeologists to take a shot at it. And I'll say, you know, looks kind of weird to me, you know, and what do y'all think? Well, that doesn't fill a 10,000-seat stadium,
exactly.
You know, I mean.
Exactly. You know.
Right.
So if my goal was to make money, that would be the choice is simple. If the goal was to try and figure this out, then it's the opposite, you know. Then put on Tyler, man, and put on, you know, the few of us who are actually trying to get to the bottom of this, you know. I feel like there's
– right.
It's – and I hate to put it on, like, the fandom, if to even use that expression, or the in the old-time term, the UFO buffs. I hate to put it on the UFO buffs, but it's like, listen, man, do you really want to figure this out, or do you just want to be titillated? And I think that there's a large segment of the audience that just wants to be titillated. They don't care about trying to figure it out. So they'll hear the same story for the 50th time, maybe with some new little wrinkle at the very end, where it's like, and we just found this document. We just heard this thing recently, you know, and it's like, oh, man. And they get retitillated, but it's like, what are we doing? Are you trying to figure this out, or you just want to hear Rendlesham again?
I completely agree with you there, and that's exactly why I have not been to a MUFON event in years now. I took some responsibility for boycott the things that I don't want to financially. Or you know, support otherwise. I don't want to encourage more of same. So I'm not gonna be a member of MUFON. I'm not gonna send them my money. I'm not gonna pay for their speakers. I think that's important because absolutely it will continue as long as we enable it. And so I took responsibility not to financially or morally support organizations that I don't think are worthy of my support and my interest and or others for that matter. And, you know, we are the funders. When it comes right down to it, we are the funding entity. Mm. And if we don't like what we're seeing, we should withdraw that financial support.
Exactly. Well, that's what I mean when I said, you know, I don't like to put it on the UFO buffs, but at the end of the day, they are the drivers of the machine, you know. And it's like, geez, guys, what do you really want? Well, I don't want to forget this question that Sue Johnson in the chat room asked, because it'll fall away as we keep going. So let me get this in now.
Okay.
We're kind of at the hour mark. It'll be a nice little break in the action here. She wants to know, she's interested in hearing about any weird experiences you may have had.
Oh, Sue, that's nice of you to ask. I did have a sighting as a child, or at least I remember it that way. I feel like prefacing this with a bit of a disclaimer that one of the reasons that I've come to write less and talk less about myself and any weird experiences I may have had is what we were talking about earlier, that people try to tell me what did and didn't happen, and both, I've been on both sides of it. I've had people telling me that, you know, memory will fail you and I need to look into false memories, and I've had people on the other hand telling me, you know, that I was I'm certainly have seen the aliens that are here. And I you know, and I mean that metaphorically, that, you know, you had a UFO sighting, then you know, get in our camp. And I feel like I'm getting pulled on each arm to go to the debunkers or the believers side. But yeah, I had a sighting when I was a child. I don't know what it was. That's pretty much all I really can say about it. In more recent time, I lived in a house in Central Florida that is kind of a funky story. I had kids at home at the time, and they used to talk about seeing this old lady, and I never really, you know, gave it much mind. And then one night I had come from the grocery store, and I was walking in the house, and it was an old Florida wood frame house, and I was coming in the house, and I saw this lady, I thought, standing in the yard. And I felt like she looked confused, and I felt like she was really old, and that she was dressed inappropriately, like in old stuff. And like I worded it that way because I thought it was my first thought was someone's wandered off from some kind of care facility, and I need to set these groceries down and speak to her. So I set them down, I turned around, and nobody was there. And I don't have an explanation for that. Could I tell you what I did or didn't see? No. But the reason I started it with the kids used to say they had seen an old lady is sometime later, I as I mentioned earlier, been in the music business, and I was playing a gig, and I was giving out cards that had my address on it, and a man took the card, and he told me that he used to live at that home and that he grew up in it, and, you know, to cut to the chase, he told me that it was haunted and that his mom, you know, hung around and that she'd be really pleased the musician was there, yada, yada. But, you know, I don't know. You know, strange things happen. I don't know what that does or doesn't mean. I don't have any idea. But thanks for the question, Sue.
Yeah, that's cool. I wish I could have something like that happen. Sounds like, you know, it didn't freak you out enough that your life's ruined, so you're all right. It's just a cool
No. It was like, wow, I must not have seen anybody, but then I'm standing there looking with the groceries set down, so obviously I thought I did, you know. It was a weird feeling. Yeah, it was a strange feeling.
That's pretty cool. All right, well, you know, we're at the halfway point. Let me see what we got in the notes here. I feel like we kind of touched on the David Jacobs thing a little bit, and I laughed uproariously when you mentioned the Emma Woods affair, because it's just such a scandal that, you know, we're one of the few programs that even talk about it, and which is amazing in a way. I'm just fascinated by that more than anything, you know, that they don't, they being sort of like mainstream ufology, doesn't want to, I guess, acknowledge the broader picture that abduction research is a wasteland now, you know? It's like, that's the real, I mean, if we move beyond the scandalousness of the Emma Woods thing, which it was scandalous, of course, and just look at the fact that John Mack's gone, Bud Hopkins is gone, David Jacobs is last of the big Titan researchers left, and now we're looking back at stuff in retrospect, and everything looks like garbage. So it's like, where have we been the last 30 years? This thing is a complete mess. So I guess give me your overall sort of thoughts on the state of abduction research and what we know now compared to maybe what you were thinking it was like when you got into it in the first place.
Yeah, when I first got into it, I thought it was fascinating. I thought that I was willing to be open-minded to attend Hopkins's presentations and listen. I thought I was open-minded to be willing to read Jacob's material. I'm now much less trusting. I'm not sure that I accept their motives. I question some of the motives, particularly of David Jacobs, after I've pretty extensively studied the Emma Woods case. And he simply did not conduct himself like someone that was sincerely concerned about her safety. And if you really believe that someone was being sexually molested on a regular basis by otherworldly beings, you simply wouldn't conduct yourself the way that he did, in my opinion. I certainly wouldn't. If I thought a person was being hurt by people, I wouldn't just be
right
calling them up and recording it, you know. I think it's a mess. I definitely think you're right about that. I think that basically the abduction people, the hypnotherapist, the hypnotist, I think they went to hypnosis, relaxation techniques, whatever the hell they want to call it, that
yeah
amounts to telling people to close their eyes and confabulate. I think they went to that because they otherwise didn't have any evidence. And that's the main thing they did. And one of the biggest problems I have with Dr. Jacobs' handling of the Emma Woods case is that Temple University, publicly anyway, said that he didn't do anything wrong and said he was just collecting oral history. But Dr. Jacobs has told me during an interview, he stated on a number of occasions about collecting materials, having them tested. We know that he just, you know, lost his mind with Emma Woods, the, you know, things he asked her to do and send him and talk about. And he was conducting research. He was trying to get materials. He was trying to get the evidence that would validate his hypotheses, and he couldn't get it. And instead of changing those theories, he just wasn't reporting that they were coming up empty, or he was failing to revise the hypothesis. And what we have, you know, you were saying it's just a mess. Where are we at with it all? We've got a lot of fabulous, fantastic stories, and we don't have anything at all that would give us a real indication that there's anything extraterrestrial going on, from the best as I can tell. And again, I want to emphasize that I don't want to tell people what they did or did not experience. I don't know, but I think, for instance, Project Core is on the right track and saying, let's go back to square one here. What happened?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, let's start with that.
Yeah, exactly.
And when you go into an investigation calling yourself an investigator of alien abduction, you've pretty much already tainted the well. And
yeah.
You know, I mean, good Lord. And That's the problem. That's one of the many problems. That, you know, with David Jacobs, there were concerns, of course, of ethics, and even without the Emma Woods case, I did a 3-part blog post in 2012 on his work, and even it, without it just doesn't stand up to critical inquiry. And it's a mess, like you're saying. That's the bottom line. It's a mess. What are people experiencing? I don't know. I don't know. I could name several things that several explanations that would apply to some cases that are, you know, pretty mundane, that don't apply necessarily to all cases.
Right.
In order to get a better handle on it, are any of the cases really a true unknown, indicative of something we don't know? Well, we're going to have to answer the questions that Project CORE is posing and figure out how to get more funding and ask the right questions, not the wrong ones.
Hmm. Yeah, it seems like the whole... Well, actually, let me jump to this, because you raised my eyebrows here a little bit, because both in reading the UFO trail and tonight you mentioned it, because I'm in here in Boston, and, you know, the Hill case is kind of like, you know, it's kind of like apocryphal here or something, you know, it's sort of like you don't really...
Oh, absolutely.
You don't really, like, you don't really, you give it the benefit of the doubt. I guess you could say there's a bias here.
Sure.
But from reading the UFO trail and from what you said, there are definitely some questions involved here on how it all went down, and maybe it's not the seminal alien abduction case after all. So talk a little bit about that and enlighten me to this, because, you know, I'll be honest, my blinders are on, so I just can't look at that stuff without being like, oh no. You know, and just turning away. So tell me about it, about what some of these problems are or concerns, I guess you could say.
Sure. I'm a bit skeptical about the Hill case. Again, you know, I could put it this way, that if we want a fantastic conclusion, like, you know, doctors from the stars came and checked them out, we'd need a lot more conclusive evidence than we seem to currently have. What do I think happened? Probably most likely is that they're just confused. That one of the things that I don't think people know a lot about is a significant amount of time passed between the event and when they ended up working with Dr. Simon. And they had a lot of time to talk about it in that amount of time. So when they say, well, they separated the two of them and did the hypnosis separately, I'm not sure really how much weight that carries. I'm also just not confident in the process, the hypnosis process, and people that present it as a pro-alien story often leave out that Dr. Simon never indicated that he believed they were abducted by aliens. The hypnosis at the time was thought to be a treatment for trauma, and that's what he was using it for. He wasn't trying to pull stories out of them. And, you know, there's some interesting aspects of it. There's writers like Nick Redfern that seem pretty thoroughly convinced that it has to do with CIA interest in behavioral modification and, you know, the mind control research. I think there are some interesting connections there. Boston, you might be aware, you know, Martin Ornay was worked at Harvard, and he was a consultant for MK Ultra, and Dr. Simon worked at Harvard and as well in the same time frame. And at that exact point in time, Martin Ornay was heading up a sub-project on hypnosis. And Redfern as well has gone into talking about some information on the author, Fuller, of the initial... I believe it was the initial account of the Hill case, and Nick says that a lot of that could be called into question, and he he believes that if I understand his material correctly, Nick is under the impression that Fuller was paid by the powers that be to promote the story in the manner he did. And there's, you know, a lot of FOIA stuff yet to be done, I guess. You know, a lot of questions to be answered.
Yeah,
I don't know, man.
Anything. Yeah, it's a weird.
I don't know.
Yeah. It's a weird story. That's for sure.
It certainly is. And, you know, some people say, you know, the grandfather of alien abductions, and there's another camp that says the grandfather of you know, mind control experiments.
Yeah, disinformation,
you know?
Or something.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of people on that topic say, well, why would they lead people to think this or that or the other? What purpose would it serve? And there's a few answers to that, but I think a better question for that is along the lines of what happened to all of these, I mean, tens of thousands of people that we know were abused during these mind control projects and behavior modification projects. And it seems pretty likely to me that some of them could have become pretty confused and traumatized about what they thought happened to them. So whether you want to pin it on the CIA and company as intentionally creating alien abduction, it wouldn't seem like that big a stretch to me that some of these people that wander into alien abductee support groups and get such open-armed acceptance might have had other traumatic events actually befall them. You know?
Oh, absolutely. What? Yeah. I think that's definitely the case. I mean, you talk about screened memories and stuff like that. It's like, maybe it's because they're always like, you know, the people can't remember or whatever. But it's like maybe the screened memory is the abduction part, you know, where it's like something actually really horrible happened to you, but it makes you feel better to believe that an alien abducted you because that way you weren't really being tinkered with by black ops guys or something. Who knows? You know.
And a lot of the MO fits as well. I mean, you know, since even the 1980s, there were some authors doing some pretty thought provocative work on you know, that electromagnetic fields can cause short term amnesia and stuff like that. And we've certainly seen that if you approach some of these MUFON folks with the symptoms, they're going to certainly tag you an alien abductee and these so-called researchers. So it's not that big a stretch to me that some people could have been victimized or used in research projects without their knowledge and with fragmented memories from 20 years, 30 years, 40 years ago, were encouraged to believe they were alien abductees. That's not a stretch to me.
Right. Well, it's part of a sort of a larger theme I noticed at the UFO Trail, which is like ufology. If you listen to sort of the mainstream history, let's say, of ufology, it's like they never sort of want to consider the idea that any of these, like, big UFO events were some government thing. You know, it's always like the government's reacting. They never want to talk about the possibility that some of these things are staged by the government in order to, God knows what, you know, mess with the Russians or mess with us. You know, who knows? Float a story out there. There's all kinds of reasons why they'd want to make a UFO event happen. And it's like that ufology rarely looks at it and goes, hey, wait a minute, maybe what we think was an alien ship was actually the government with another idea.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you saying that, it brings to mind the guy that'll jump up and yell, it wasn't anything that we have. We didn't have that kind of technology. And, You're like, you know, and what are you, read into the most classified Air Force projects? You know, I mean, how would you know?
Yeah.
You know, and another thing, yeah, I think you're getting at is that when people read things, they don't read what's there. They read into it what they like to think it means, or what they suppose it means. And absolutely, you know, what you're saying about couldn't some of that been the government, I'll read people's work and their blogs and their books, and they'll do a pretty good job of citing, you know, and the Air Force denied this, and the CIA, you know, refused this FOIA request. But then they, you know, and they'll piece together this pretty apparent government cover-up, and I'll think, what would lead you to believe that has anything to do with an alien? You know, I mean, wouldn't that be more indicative that they know what it is, and they have their hand in it? You know, it would seem to me that, yeah, if the Air Force and the CIA and the FBI don't want to talk to you about what happened in 1961 with the Hills, I don't think we can read that indicates aliens any more than we can read that it doesn't, you know? Or you see what I'm saying?
I see exactly what you're saying.
So, you know, the web page or whatever is just something that you guys do for fun. Do you have a real job?
Well, that is our job.
Oh.
We don't technically get money for the hours we put in, but it is our job.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
How come you don't have any money? I thought you had a paper route.
Well, I'm taking a sabbatical to focus on my pottery.
Oh. How's that working out?
Not good, Meg. Not good.